Hi, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic member of the Carl Gables Group. I've actually got the 12 and 12 open here to step 7 to fool you into believing that I'm actually going to talk about it. Might touch upon it. Who knows? We'll see. I read a little. It says, since this step is so specifically concerns itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what humility is and what the practice of it can mean to us. And so this is all about humility. And so I was going to give my talk on humility tonight, but I quite frankly, I never give it to a group this small. So we'll save that talk for another time. I really don't know. You see, here's the bad news. I was thinking about whether I should give a talk on humility, but I really don't have enough guts to give a talk about something I don't know anything about. So, I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I could probably do it. I could carry it off for a little while. I'm not sure I could do 45 minutes of it, you know. But, you know, if you're a bar drinker, you know, you can talk about just about anything for 5 or 10 minutes. And I really don't know anything about humility. I really don't. I know a lot about it. I could speak for hours on arrogance and, you know, being egotistical and prideful and all that sort of stuff. I know all about that. I'm very familiar with it. I think I invented that deal. But I don't know much about humility. I don't know how you do it. What do? I guess you wake up in the morning and say, today I'll be humble. Is that what you do? I'm going to be humble today, you know. I think I'll be humble. I'll sit in the back of the room and I won't talk and I'll be humble. I think you lose it then. I don't know. I mean, there's something about it. I think if you say, I'm going to do this and I'll be humble, I think as soon as you do that, you've just blown it. You know, there's a lot of people. I remember saying to my sponsor, my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, once. You know, when I first came into AA, I didn't talk much. I know you find that hard to believe, but it's true. You know, you change. You have to come to AA, and he said. So I was going to meetings, and I would like pass, and I'd say I don't really have much to say, and all that sort of stuff. That's before you get to the point in AA where you say, well, I wasn't going to say much, but. And then you pontificate for 50 hours about something you don't know anything about, but, you know, you give your opinion. But I remember my sponsor said, he said, I notice you're not talking much, you're not sharing. And I said, this is what I said to him. Well, I don't have anything important to share, which I thought was pretty humble, you know. And this is what he said to me. He said, you know, you're selfish. And he says, you're selfish. He says, you know, these people come to this meeting and they share, well, not only because they have to share, because they share the most intimate things going on in their lives, because they think that not only it'll help them, that it may help somebody else who's there. And he says, you know, you sit there like a voyeur and you listen to everything they say. You lap it up and you listen to everything they say, but when it comes time for you to speak, you won't give it out. He says, you know something? You're all get and no give. He says, who the hell are you to determine that what you have to say is no important? Who made you the decision maker as far as that? These people are willing to do that. You're not willing to do that. He says, let me tell you something. You're selfish. It's all about you. Man, I was, I thought humble meant you didn't talk. See, I had a lot of things screwed up, you know, and some of the humblest guys I know, you know, listen, you know, there are some people I know that sit around, they see people maybe like me or people who speak, and I have a gift for that, or I do that. I am a lawyer, but you don't have to be a lawyer to do this, but I mean, that's what I do for a living, and there are a lot of people that sort of talk. There are people that don't talk. That doesn't make any difference whatsoever. But I've run across people that think that somehow if you're speaking in the meeting or you're sharing or you're doing a step series, well, that means like you're not humble, and that's because they've never done it. Because anybody who speaks in front of a group of people and shares, whether it be for 10 minutes or an hour, whatever, knows it can be the most petrifying thing in the world, but the last thing you want to do in front of a group of alcoholics is be prideful. Because, you know, they'll see through you like that. Nobody recognizes a bullshit artist more than an alcoholic. I mean, that's when you really, you want to put yourself under the microself? You want to put yourself in the crosshairs? Just sit up there and, you know, you think it's easy, you sit up here and do a step meeting. You know, this isn't about, listen, telling people how to do it or what they should do, you know, or teaching people anything. This is about exposing yourself. This is about being honest with people. This is about being authentic. It's easy to sit in the back of the room in your throne of contempt and say, look how humble I am. You know, I don't talk, you know, like this. It's easy to do that stuff, isn't it? So you see, it's such a weird thing. You know, you think humility has something to do with actions. Like if you talk, you're not humble, but if you don't talk, you're humble. And it all has to do with intentions. Intention is such a strange sort of thing, you know. Like if you intend to be humble, you've lost it. You know, that's the old story. You know, they were handing out the they were going to give me the medal on humility. I went out to get it, and they took it away. So I want to talk a little bit about. There's something I've been thinking about in my mind regarding, and I really don't know anything about humility. I really don't. I don't know how to explain. You can read the if you read the 12 and 12, I guess it'll tell you about humility. That's the best thing to do. But I want to talk about. So what I decided to do is not talk about something I don't know about, which is humility, but I want to talk about something I know a little bit about, you know, and that's me. And, you know, maybe I figure, you know, the way the Holy Spirit works, where the spirit of these rooms work, is if I just sort of honestly share a little bit about me, there's a possibility that, you know, chicken on the roof thing, like God, humility might show up. You know, like, not because of anything I'm doing, trust me, it won't have anything, because if I try to make this thing on humility, I'm going to fail abysmally. But if I just try to be honest and sincere with y'all, you know, something may happen. You never know. That's the way this deal works. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But you know what you got to do? You got to trust in the Lord on this one. You got to just have to give it up and say trust it and not try to force it. So there are a couple things I want to read and I want to talk about in the 12 and 12 in the big book. And there's something, there's sort of like a theme that I've been thinking about, and it's like all sorts of themes. I don't really do a whole lot of preparing, you know, not that you don't realize that before I get up here, but I do have certain sort of general themes that I'm thinking about before I'm getting here. And you know, it's kind of funny, it's kind of scary. It's like an e-ride at Disney World. I have this like general concept or idea of something that's sort of been mulling around in my head, and I have no idea what the connection is. It's just like thoughts going around in my head that I have no idea what the connection is. And I get up there here, and it's just little things. And I say, well, Lord, I hope this comes together and makes some sense, because I don't have any clue as to what the deal is. And I was thinking about step 7 and how it's worked in my life, humbly asking him to remove our shortcomings. And, you know, the operative word is humbly. I don't know how you do that humbly thing, but that's the operative word, I guess, in that deal. And I was thinking of that in conjunction with the sixth step, you know, the wanting, the willingness to want to do that deal, to get to that point, to strive for that thing in terms, and I was thinking of it, and as you know, if you've been at this step series, I'm going to stick with this theme. If you've been at this step theory series since the beginning, my theme has been, always is, you can call it an 11th step or third step. I don't care what you want to call it. But my theme is that the only thing you really need to really get in this deal, and God will supply, you know, it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all things will be supplied to you. You know, that you don't have to seek anything except for him, because that's what it says in the big book. It's all about him. You know, he's going to do the thing for you. It says it right here in Vision for You. That's what the steps are all about. You can read them. I know what it's about. It's not about your brain. It's not about analyzing yourself. It's not about psychiatrists. It's all about, it starts off, ends up being all about him. And here's what it says, lest ye get mixed up in this. It says, still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. Upon him. You know, I have guys, I was talking to a guy that I care about. He's a good guy. He's here tonight about a problem he had. He said, what do I do about this problem? I said, you need to talk to him. And he said, yeah, but I appreciate that. I understand. He says, but what do you think I ought to do? I said, well, you need to talk to him. You need to pray to him. You need to bring him into your life. I said, I understand that. I heard you that. But it's this problem I have, and it's been bothering me. I don't know what to do. I said, I'm telling you what to do. He says, what are you telling me? I said, you need to talk to him. You need to pray to him. I said, why don't you try it? You know, that's what this book is all about. It's about him. You know, there are people that figure this out and actually follow instructions and talk to him and do him, and then it magically happens. There are people that are trying to figure it out because they don't trust him. They don't want to look for him. God will determine that, so you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got seated with, that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Well, if I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think we all agree, I think we had a showing of hands. When we first started, I said, you know, before every meeting and every A group you go to almost in the world, it says, they read one thing. They say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I said, how many people want to follow this path? They said, everybody raised their hand. I said, well, then it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That's the statement, okay? So if you all want to follow his path, I don't know how you follow his path if you ain't looking for him. You ought to be looking for him, trying to find out where he is, hanging out where he is. If you don't know where he is, maybe you can get a clue as to somebody who might know somebody who might be able to lead you to somebody who might know where he used to be or hang out. You know what I mean? Maybe you might be able to find somebody who can point to a book that might give you a clue as to where he once was. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, I would think that if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous and you want to follow his path, you would be like on the hunt for him. I mean, this him is apparently very important because they wrote all about it in here. It's all about him. That's right. Read the 12 steps. It's all, how, you know, read the 12 steps. What's it about? It's about him. I saw the 11th step. It says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. So if you've got to get a conscious contact with God and relationship with God, and you got to try to understand him, I would think you'd be looking for him. You'd be interested in him. You'd want him. You know? I mean, I know we all want sex, drugs, rock and roll, and money, but I would think, and I'm not sure you could ever get rid of that, but I think on the pecking order, the ones who really make it, you've got probably sex, drugs, and rock and roll, they're like probably 6, 7, 8, and 9. And I would think he would be like one, like up there. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just, I'm thinking that, you know, and I'm going to tell you why I think that's the deal, you know, because by the way, I tried it the lopsided way, the other way around, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and everything like that, because I know in this crowd probably nobody ever did that deal. How'd it work out for you? It didn't work out too good, did it? You know? So, you know, when you come in here, you know what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to reverse that deal. You're supposed to stop that deal. Some people don't stop that deal. Some people come in here and they read the book and they say, that's great, now how can I get that other stuff? The stuff that got you crazy before you got in here, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't think it's too difficult, but I mean, for some people, this is like a mystery. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got seated with, that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact. This is the great fact. Fourth step isn't the great fact. It really isn't the great fact. The fourth step isn't the great fact. You know, the ninth step isn't the great fact. You know, the great fact is see to it your relationship with him is right. That's the great fact. That's the number one thing. That's the only thing you got to understand. Look for him. You know, if you're in the dark and everything's going bad and nothing's going right and everything's screwed up and you got no way to turn and you don't understand crap, you know what the great fact is? Just look for him. You know, you don't know where he is. You call up somebody and say, listen, I'm looking for him. Have you seen him? Where could he be? You know, just find somebody who you think might know who he is. Hang out. You think somebody, that guy knows who he is or has a clue, or at least whoever he is. He may not know who he is, but I think he's closer to finding out who he is than I am. So you just stick with that guy. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him. There you go again. And your fellows, clear away the records of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. So, I want to tie that in. I want to tie what I said in the beginning is, I said, look, you know, sometimes going up to these steps, the way I figure it is, as I was going up to these steps, they were so completely contrary to my way of thinking. It so ran against my way of thinking. that I never understood them before I did them. It's not like you understand why you do the third step, or you understand what God, or you understand why you're supposed to do the fourth step or the fifth. It's like you just either do them or you don't do them. And hopefully somewhere down the road after you do them, you sort of like get a glimpse of something, like, because it starts working, and you sort of figure out something, little stuff, you know? And you sort of, it's not like you really understand this stuff. So what I said to you is, it's my feeling, and I really believe this is true, is if the whole book is about searching for him, and I know it is, because it says the one thing that we have to be absolutely convinced of, what are the three things? One, that we're alcoholic and can't manage our own lives, no matter how much we try to manage. And then what do? We spend the next 20, 30 years trying to do what? Manage our lives, right? That's what everybody in here is trying to do. We have a book that says, hey, here's the three things we got to understand. Number one, see, you think this has to do with alcohol. This has nothing to do with alcohol. This has nothing. You know, the people that think this has to do with alcohol are out there drinking. The people that are in here not drinking, no, this has nothing to do with alcohol, because they're not drinking, because alcohol has nothing to do with their lives. They know it has to do with being powerless. Powerless over what? Powerless over everything. So, you know, here's the one thing you got to understand, that you can't manage your own life. It doesn't say that you can't manage alcohol. It doesn't say that you can't not drink or you can't manage bars. It says that you're an alcoholic and you can't manage your own life. So we all say, yeah, I got that. I got that. And then what do? Spend 95% of our day trying to manage people, places, and things in our lives, and then talking about how they're all getting screwed up because they're not following direction. Things aren't working out right, right? Okay, that's what A is all about, right? You got 95% thumb-sucking crybabies, 5% fellowship of the Spirit. And so there's a fellowship of the Spirit. I know there is. I know there is, because it says right here, it says, we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. You'll surely meet some of us. We trudge through it. So apparently there's some guys who sort of like break escape velocity and somehow make it past the gravitational pull of Earth and make it to some place where, not that they're perfect, but it's like sort of like they're like on to something. Maybe they're on to the scent of him. I don't know. So that we're alcoholic and can't manage our own lives, no human power, no wife, no husband, no whatever, you know, can relieve our alcoholism. There's a whole huge group in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been there, and everybody goes through this deal, where after you get sober, you somehow believe that there is a way of managing your alcoholism through the acquisition of relationships with people, places, and things. But when you do that, it always tends to let you down, because you know something? If you come in here and you're doing okay because your business is okay, then when your business goes bad, you're not doing okay. If you're doing okay because your marriage is okay, then as soon as your wife starts looking at you funny, your husband, then you're not doing okay. I mean, as soon as you base everything that's going on in your life on somebody or something else, let me tell you something. It's all temporary. It's all like gone, like this. It's all, you know, there's nothing that's permanent here. You know, and even if you didn't believe that logically, here's the fact of the matter. The fact of the matter is I didn't invent this stuff and I didn't write this stuff. This isn't my theory, you know? My theory is gather up all the money you can, you know what I mean? This is my theory. This is AA. AA says there's three fundamental facts, that we can't manage our own lives. We can't manage our own lives. No person, place, or thing can do it for us or cure out. Listen, but God could and would if he were sought. So, I mean, how many times do they have to say in the book, seek him, seek him, seek him, seek him? How many ways do they have to say, see the relationship with right is him, he is the one? How many times do they have to say, burn the consciousness in every man, that it doesn't matter what happens, he may not get his family back, and see to his relationship with God is right, and that's the only thing he needs, you know, the clean house and trust in God. How many times it has to say, him, 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 for you to get the idea that this has something to do with a relationship with him? So here's my theory. It was the theory from the first, it's the theory in the seventh step. That if you are just looking for him, you're going to get this thing. This is going to work out for you. If you have a driving want, a desire to be with him or close to him or find out who he is, this thing is going to work out for you. Whether it take 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And if you don't know who he is and you don't want a relationship, it doesn't matter how many steps you do or what meetings you go to. Or it ain't going to work. It just ain't going to happen. It's like making chocolate cake without the chocolate. Because he's such a part of the whole deal. You know, it doesn't matter if you mechanically. Now you may mechanically, like we all start off, you may mechanically do stuff, not having any idea of anything, and all of a sudden he may come upon you. He may find you. You know, it's not like from the beginning. I'm talking about this stuff now. Like, this isn't like the way I felt like the second day. You know what I mean? But the bottom line is, over a period of time, After 25 years, you see who makes it. You see who doesn't. You see what's going on. And so this has to do with him and searching for him. And as I'm saying this, I was thinking about something else this morning. I went to a meeting this morning, and somebody shared on something. And I had been thinking about it some time, because I am a real, somehow, and I'm not sure I have this all together, except I know it has to do with, here's the beauty. If you're honest with yourself and you're sincere about things, you know, what we try to do as alcoholics, I see it all the time. I've tried to do it. Other people try to do it. So we try to think. We try to figure this thing out. We try to figure this thing out. We start talking about, you know, our feelings or why we feel the way we do or what we feel the way we do. And you know, the truth is we don't have a clue. We are just, forget it. You know what I mean? We're so clueless. You know, the singer I was talking to the other day, he says, you know, I'm totally clueless. I have no idea what's going on. I said, you're real close. You're almost there. You know what I mean? And it's something about just being stupid that's really, you know, if you're an alcoholic, it's probably a real good thing. Because, you know, I'll tell you something. I don't know anything about humility, but I know when I had it. I know when I had it. It was for a nanosecond that I lost. It was the night I picked up my white chip. You know, the night when I knew nothing and I was nothing and I was never going to be nothing, and a group of people that I didn't even know, I stood up. And I walked to the front of the room. It was a long walk like this. And I picked up a white tip, and I basically declared, without worrying what people would say, you know, I need help. I'm an alcoholic. And I was the dumbest guy in the room. Man, I was like, if there was a mountain of humility, I was like on the top on that night. And then it all went to shit from there. You can't do it. You try to get that white chip humility at 25 years. It's hard, you know. It's a hard deal. You know what I mean? It's a hard deal. How do you get that? How do you fit in that 20 and still get back to that white chip deal? You know, and so I want to talk about something that somehow there's a connection between this thing I was going to talk about, and I'm not sure where it is, but maybe we'll figure it out together. And it has to do with fellowship, and it has to do with the fellowship of the Spirit. There was a gentleman that spoke this morning at the car room, and I was there, and I do the same thing all the time when I speak. I've seen so many people do the same exact thing. Joe Snyder did it, my second sponsor. Bob Sullivan did it, my first sponsor. I've seen so many people that I love and respect that have incredible programs, people who I sense are part of the, I don't know who this Fellowship of the Spirit is, but I've, you know, every once in a while you're hanging around here and you just sort of see somebody and you say, you know, I think he's close to it. I think that guy, yeah, I mean, you get around here a long enough time, you sort of sense, you know, there's some people that, you know, are bouncing all over the place. You know, there's something about being steady. I heard somebody, actually it was a preacher, do a sermon on love, and he said, these are the words. He says, love is steady. See, I thought, used to think love was, you know, doing this and love was doing that. He says, hey, listen, love is steady. And I came from an alcoholic home. And you know something? I'm sure my mother, I guess, loved me in her own way, the way mom looked. But you know something? I never knew when I was coming home whether she was going to be on the ground in a negligee drunk, or she was going to greet me with hugs or screaming or yelling. My life, when you're living with an alcoholic, was so, there was nothing about my life that was steady. It was all about, you didn't know whether you went to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, whether it was going to be screaming and yelling and cursing and the crashing of plates against the wall. You didn't know whether on Christmas time it was going to be a nice Christmas or the Christmas tree was going to set on fire. You didn't know from day to day, from hour to hour, whether you were going to be embarrassed in front of your friend. You didn't know. My life was so unsteady. And let me tell you something, love don't grow on that deal. Emotionalism, all the emotionalism in the world of my mother coming up to me for a nanosecond during 5 minutes and saying, I love you, with all the tears, didn't mean squat. It was just a bunch of crappy emotion. You know, because let me tell you something. You know what love is? Love is steady. You know, and that's little boys and little girls. You know where they grow best? They grow best in steady. You know, there's nothing wrong with going to a football game with your kids or taking them out to a movie or being the little league coach or anything like that. But you give me sure and steady every day of the week. You know, I don't really pal around with my kids. I don't do much with them. I do mostly AA stuff, and they know it. They've been to meetings and everything like that. I got 4 kids, 3 grandchildren. And, you know, some, they love me. And, I'm not necessarily the friend or anything, but you want to know something? I try to figure out what's the deal. It says, because I'm steady. You know, I'm the way I am now is the way I am yesterday, tomorrow. You know, it wasn't always like this. I'm just sort of, this is it, you know. There's not much change. You know, people who know me know, you know, tomorrow this is the way I am, yesterday the way I am. I mean, I just like that. When I used to be all over the place. So after a while you've been in here, you sort of recognize steady. Steady sort of stands out. You know, you sort of crave steady. And every person I've known in here that has had sobriety that I have really wanted, has always done one thing that I can remember absolutely when they talk. They always talk about the people they admired. Now, I know we're not supposed to put anybody on a pedestal. You understand what I'm saying? I understand that deal. We're not supposed to put people on a pedestal. Now, I didn't understand it initially, okay, because I put these people on pedestals. I did. You know, you can't help but do it. I sort of hero worshipped them. I looked at them. I looked up to them and everything like that. After a while, I started to learn about the pedestals. I understand what that deal is. I understand that they're not perfect, which actually made it even cooler. Because it made them even better, because I understood they were alcoholic and they weren't perfect. That was part of the thing. But there was no question about the fact that there were certain people in my life, men, I'm going to talk mostly, there were some women, but mostly men for me, whether you want to call them father figure, you know, they say in the big, you are reborn. Well, I guess if you're reborn, you got a new family. There were certain, I had, whether you call it an AA father, an AA daddy, or whatever it is, there were certain people in AA that I really looked up to. And this guy this morning was talking about his first sponsor, and he named him, and his first this, and he had the guys by name. He remembered exactly what they said, how they talked, where they were, how he thought. I said, man, that's me. That's the way I talk about, like, Eddie Edwards and Joe Snyder and Bud Dunbar and Bob Sullivan and everything. You hear me talk over any period of time, I'm gonna throw these names out, the Ray O'Keefes. I'm going to throw these. And not because they were perfect, but they were about as good as it gets for me on the planet. And, you know, I'd like to think I have a relationship with God today, a strong relationship that I've ever had with God. But you know something? There's something about me. I don't do well around perfection. I don't even understand perfection. I don't even know what perfection looks like. You know what? Perfection scares the shit out of me. You know what I mean? Because I am so less than. I am so not. I am so screwed up. You know, that's maybe why I shied away from church or church people or other people, because I felt so insufficient. You know what I mean? Perfection doesn't work with me. But I'll tell you, you know what was sort of great about these guys? You know, I talk a lot about Al Kennedy as a good example. Like I went to that old story. I went to the meeting and he did the meeting and he was great and I was watching him and he was sharing. He was being honest and really moved me and he was helping people. And then he walked out the door and he turned to my sponsor and said, man, that guy's great. And he says, you know, he has cancer. He's dying of cancer. I said, no, the guy just smoked. He says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. I'm not talking about the guy. He's dying of cancer. And 3 months later, he was dead. And I saw stuff like that. You know, I'd never been involved with men in my life. I mean, I didn't know that because, you know, because I didn't know what it meant to be a man. I was sort of like, you know, so I was sort of like, I was playing it by the seat of my pants, man. You know what I mean? I figured it had something to do with, you know, I don't know, making money or fighting or having sex or, you know, I don't know what it had, having a nicer car. I don't know what, better suit. I don't know what the deal had to do with. But I knew one thing. I was faking it, not making it, you know. And everybody I was hanging around with was the same deal. Everybody I hung around with was the same, excuse my language, horse shit. I didn't think it was all mocking, cynical, glib horse shit. You know what I mean? It was like pretend manhood, you know what I mean? Trying to figure out, and you know, and every once in a while I'd run into a man, I'd say, man, I got to stay away from that guy. He's scary. You know, like every once in a while you run into a grown-up, you know, and they're like scary because they're like not chuckling at you. They're not laughing at the same joke. They sort of look at you funny, you know, and so I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what I ran into? Well, first of all, the first thing I ran into a lot of wackos like me. You know, I don't want you to think I ran into a lot of men, you know, because like my sponsor said, this ain't Well People's Anonymous. You know what I mean? You know the whack jobs in the bars? You know where they are? They're all in here. You know, they're all in here. You know, you don't come here from church. You know, you come here straight from, they take the wackiest sons of a bitches in the bars The ones who are the craziest, you know, they all wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? So here's the deal. Here's what it says in the book. So here's the test. What's the first step? What's the first step? What's the first step? Okay, do we all agree on that? You're wrong. Here's the first step, okay? If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. That's the first step. That's the first step. You know, if you don't get it, I can't explain it any better than that. If you've decided you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready to take the steps unless you get to that step. So what are the two things you need in order to get to that step? You have to decide you want what we have and be willing to do anything to get it, right? So here's the question. Who's we? Who's we? If you've decided to want what we have, who's we? Who's we? Is we the wackiest son of a bitch you meet in Alcoholics Anonymous? Is we? I'll tell you who we is. We for me was Joe Snyder. We for me was Bob Sullivan. We for you is maybe somebody different. We for the guy this morning was John Tully, his sponsor up in Philadelphia, or Bob Connors. We for somebody else will be Bud Dunbar. Anybody who's been around here for 25, 30, 40 years, you start talking, you know what they're going to talk about? They're going to talk about this guy and that guy. They're going to talk about one of the we's. Because, you know, here's the incredible thing. God is a nice concept when you come in here, but you know something? I don't see God. God ain't eating brisket with me down at Nick's. You know what I mean? God is some invisible sort of thing. You know what I see? I see some guy, and he's an alcoholic, and his name's Joe Snyder. And here's the deal with Joe. Or here's the deal with Eddie Edwards. Or here's the deal with Bud Dunbar. They are so far down the deal. They are so far. They are like event horizon. They were on, like, you look at the horizon. You know the horizon where the sun is? They're like on the horizon. They're like 2 million miles away on the horizon. That's where Joe Snyder was to me. I'm looking at Al Kennedy as he's dying of terminal cancer, and he's talking the way I'm talking here. And I'm looking at him like this, and he might as well be like on the moon. And I'm looking at this guy, and here's what the deal is. He may not be God, but he might as well be. He might as well be. And you know what I'm saying? This is what I'm saying. If you're an alcoholic like me, I'm not saying I want to be like God. What do you think I'm saying? Man, if I could only be like Al Kennedy. Because he's as good a representative on the planet right here. Now, here's the cool thing about Al Kennedy. I'm looking at him because I want to be like him. I want what he has because he's my we. You understand what I'm saying? And here's the cool thing about him. He's so far down the road. It's so far that there's a thought in my mind, I could almost never get there. How could I ever do that deal? You know what I mean? You know, of course, and then there's the alcohol thought, I want it by Tuesday, you know? But here's the crazy part. He's just alcoholic enough and just perfect enough, so there's some little spark inside me that says, maybe, just maybe, I could do it. Because you see, if he was too perfect, not only couldn't I hang out with him, I wouldn't even be able to, but you know, these guys somehow, with the way they are, that fellowship, you know? There's something inside of me that says I could do that. I might be able to do this deal. I think I can have this deal, you know, when they share. So here I am. I'm looking at these guys, and I want what they have. And I'll do anything to get where they're going and what they're doing and doing what they're doing. And I think that for me, looking back at this thing, this has so much to do with step seven. It says in step seven, for us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. It was only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel real humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. It goes on to say, This improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the battle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints. It didn't appeal to us. This whole chapter, and there's a part in there, and I can't find it right now, where it says we began to embrace or see where suffering could be of value. It's all about character building. It's all about going through stuff. I got to tell you something. I've been sober, as I said, about a little over 25 years. I've been through some stuff. And you know something? If you've been around for a while, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, you're going to go through. You're going to be thrown into the crucible. You're going to be thrown. You're going to be tested. You're going to be thrown into the deal. You're going to be crushed. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be cut up. You're going to, there's going to be some stuff going on. So I'm going to tell you something. If a year from now or tonight or 6 months from now, you feel like somebody has just been punching the crap out of you in Alcoholics Anonymous while you're trying to do the best thing as possible, don't worry about a thing. It's all happening according to plan because that's the deal. That's the way it works around here, okay? And you know, looking back on things, I believe, this is my perception, this is my belief, and maybe you don't, maybe there are people that differ with me in this, that as much as I hate going through the crap, I hate going through the money problems, I hate going through the health problems, I hate going through all the stuff that we got to go through, the bottom line is, as I look back on it, I know that the greatest growth I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous has been in the valleys, not in the mountains. That when I was doing great and I was feeling great, and I love it. I love the doing great and the feeling great and feeling on top of the world, there was like no growth. If there's something about me that's spiritual, hopefully I ain't hurting somebody. And hopefully I'm helping somebody during that period of time. And maybe I'm an example like Al Kennedy was or whatever it is to somebody. But I know where the real growth happens is when I'm saying, God, get me out of this crap. And I got to tell you something. I've been through 3 o'clock. I've been in sobriety. I've been foreclosed on twice with a wife and kids. Foreclosed on. Where they're going to kick me out of my house. I've been through. I know what it's like to drive around with $10 in the bank and no gas in your car. I know what it's like to go through financial problems and health and all sorts of stuff, okay? And hating it and not liking it and praying and have nothing to do except calling on him or searching for him or whoever he is or doing. And I got to tell you something. I don't even know how I made it. You know, I really can't even give you the secret, except I was surrounded by them, the we, because there's something about being in a family, surrounded by we, and wanting what they have, and when you're that gives you strength, because when you want that deal, when you're looking at the sixth step and says, and you see that sixth step entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, what do you think that means? You have no idea what that means. I don't have any idea what that means. I don't know what I would look like if I had no defects of character. What would I like? I'd look like pure light or something. What would I like have wing? I mean, you don't have a freaking clue what that means. Nobody in AA knows what that means. There's not a person in AA that knows what they would look like. You know, you're praying, I want God to remove all defects. Yeah, like, what is that? What would that look like, you know? You know, forget about the fact that it's impossible, you know. It would probably mean you would stop going to sporting events, you know what I mean? Guys, I don't know what the hell it would mean. You don't know what it means. You know, you don't know what this stuff, you're praying for stuff you don't, you know what it really means? It means we. It means the guy you're looking at. It means being like him. You know, that's the only conception you really have in your mind when you're praying that prayer and doing that thing and looking, you know, the Bible says without a vision the people perish. Really, the only vision you really get in here of what it could be but like or what you could be like is really the vision you get from your sponsor or from the other people who are farther down the road in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you something. I need that more today at 25 years than I did when I – you know, let me tell you something. There's nothing better – I mean, you guys who don't have like 2 months may not believe this. But in a strange sort of sense, there's nothing better than being the newest guy in the room, a total idiot, especially if you know you're a total idiot. It's a bad deal if you don't know you're a total idiot. If you don't understand how nuts you are, it's a bad deal.
But there's nothing better about being a total blithering idiot in AA and knowing you're totally surrounded by everybody in the room who has more time than you. You feel so safe in a scary shit kind of way. You know what I mean? And you just start going to meetings like it happened to me and it happens to everybody, where all of a sudden you realize you're the guy with the longest sobriety. You're always the guy with the longest sobriety. And people come up to you and say, you really helped me, you really did this, you really did that. And you look around, there ain't nobody with even close to you in sobriety. And, you know, it feels sort of good and it's kind of nice and you got to, you know, but, you know, let me tell you something. You start thinking, man, where's Bob? Where's Joe? You know what I mean? And I know Bill. I was with a guy, with Dave this morning. You know, I know that if Joe Snyder was alive tonight, we'd be, you and I and, you know, half the town would be down at the coffee house with him until 3 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing we like more than hanging around with guys with more time than us, learning from them and just sort of sitting at their knee, you know? And I got a sponsor now, and you know what I want to do? I just like to hang out with him. And I had to go out. I had to go to my church. I had to go to my Bible. I had to go out to find guys, you know, who were 70 years old, 80 years old, 90 years old, that had that kind of, you know, that I could sit down with. I have to find those guys. I got to look for those guys so that I can persevere through hard times, so I can have a vision, you know, so I can have, so because even now at 25 years, I got to have a we. I can't think I'm the we. You know what I mean? Well, I've made it. Well, it's easy to rest on our laurels. We're headed for trial. I can't think I'm the we. I got to be looking. Where's my we? If you want what we have. I got to be, if I ain't looking, it's somebody ahead of me that has something I don't have that I want to get more of. I've stopped growing. There's nothing to look at. I've stopped growing. You know what? I'm just getting stale, and I'm going to die and become one of them bleeding deacon things. You know what I mean? I always got to have somebody ahead of me. You know, what I've noticed in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's always growth, you know? You know, you're coming here, there's always getting rid of those old ideas. There's more, for every time you get rid of one idea, there's another old idea popping up that you just absolutely, now this one I cannot get rid of. First you got to get rid of the drinking, I don't want to get rid of the drinking, you get rid of the drinking. Then they say you got to get rid of hanging out with your old friends. I got rid of the drinking, why should I have to hang out? Then you got to hang out with the old, so you get rid of the hanging out with the old friends. Stop hanging around with the old places. Okay, so finally you bitch about that for a while, and then you stop hanging around the old places. You start getting new friends. Then you got to start, they want you to start hanging, stop thinking the old thoughts, the resentments. Well, what do you mean stop thinking the resentments? You'd resent them too if they did to you what I did to me. I shouldn't have to be able to, you know, what do you mean stop worrying and stop fear? You'd fear too if you didn't have any money, but you got to get rid of that. So you fight that for about 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 years, you know what I mean? You know, and then you got to get rid of those resentments. Then you got to get, there's always something. Then you got to get rid of the spending and the eating and the this and the that. There's always like one more thing you got to do and say, this is crazy. You know, there's always one more. You get over here, then they raise the damn bar one more time, you know, and there's always one more deal, you know, and there's one more guy ahead of you saying, now you got to do this. And then there's some asshole saying you got to go to Bible study and say, this is absolutely wacko. You know what I mean? This I will never do. And then you do that. Then there's the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and on and on and on and on and on. You know, it never stops. And the ones that make it are always looking ahead and always growing and always looking for the we. You know, this isn't just for the guy who picks up the white chip. You know, if you want what we have and are willing to go there, it says you'll meet some of us as you trudge the road to happiness. You'll certainly join us in the fellowship. I'm always looking for people in the fellowship of the Spirit. I want to go forward. I don't want to go backward. And by looking for those people, by looking for him, people who are talking about him, who are involved with him, who were looking, you know, when you first come in, you don't know this, you know, listen, I was totally confused. I didn't have a clue, you know. I don't say, are you looking for him or anything? But you just sort of know, you know. You know, if you're looking, if you want what we have, you sort of know who's got, you know what the deal is. You know who to hang out with. And, you know, isn't it funny? I was talking about this morning. This guy did the same thing I did. He saw this guy in front of him. This guy was John Telly. And he was so, like, unapproachable. Because, you know, these guys are, like, unapproachable. You know what I mean? Because they're so... whatever, you know what I mean? And so he finally went up to him, and he didn't want to even go up to him, you know, because the way, you know, the way old timers are, the way they were with me, you know, like they don't think you're cute or anything, you know what I mean? They shut up, kid, you know, why don't you go and you know, they don't pay attention to you, you know, you start talking, they say, I don't have time, you know, they hurt your feelings, they do, it's bad, you know, so, and he went up to, and I did the same exact thing. He went up to this guy who was going to be a sponsor, and he said, hi. And he said, yeah. And he says, well, and I've had guys do this to me. He says, well, I was thinking maybe I'm sort of, you know, looking for, you know, and if, and, you know, sometimes I take pity on them, but usually I don't. I let them, they got to go through what they got to go through. It's like you got to reach for something and it's so scary. And then finally they say, and it takes a lot of guts to ask somebody to be your sponsor, to ask one of those guys to be your sponsor. It takes a lot of guts when you know they're going to turn you down because you're such a piece of crap. When you know, why am I doing this? This is the dumbest thing in the world because I'm going to be, I'm a piece of crap. He's never going to say yes. You know, I'm stupid. I shouldn't do it. And you know something? But there, but here's the deal. There are some people, even though they feel that way, that do it anyway. They screw up their courage because they want what they, you know, they say if you're willing to go to any lengths, you think any lengths is climbing a mountain. You know what any lengths is? Walking up to one of these sons of a bitches and saying, will you be my sponsor? That's any lengths. And some guys walk up to these guys and say, will you be my sponsor? They say it. And some guys don't. And you know something? That's the first separation. That's the first separation. That's the first separation where some, where 50% fall off and the other 50% move forward. That stretch and doing that, just that thing, overcoming the fear and screwing up and saying we, because they see something they want and they're willing to do that, that's the first ante in the poker game. That's the first ante in the poker game. And then, what's the next ante? Actually hanging around them. Actually hanging around them. You know, because a lot of people ask them and they stop hanging around them. Because you know why? Because they say things that hurt your feelings. They tell you to do things you don't want to do. You know, they cramp your style. That's the second separation. You know, there's always, it's always about looking for him, always about looking for him in them, always saying, you know, it's all part of the same deal. And that's where that, and that, and it requires, what does it require? You don't even realize, but I think it requires humility. See, I don't know what humility is. I really don't. And I don't know how to be humble. I really don't even know what humility is. I wouldn't even know how to tell you to do it. But I think when you go up to another man or another woman, you say, will you sponsor me? I think that requires humility. What do you, I think it does. When you constantly call up somebody on the phone, even though they're not calling you up, I've had guys that I sponsor call me up and say, "Why you never call me?" I said, "I'm not going to." "Why don't you call me?" I said, "I don't have time." You know, I got a lot of the guys, you know, you want to call me up anytime you want. You know, I'm not your friend, your buddy, or anything. I mean, I love the guys I sponsor, but I say, you know, you call me, you know, call me if I have time to speak to you, I have time to speak to you. You know that's like a hurting thing if you got a lot of pride and everything like that. That's what I did. You know something? There are some guys that, you know, can live with that and deal with that and say, it's okay, I'll call you. That's our relationship. Our relationship is I'm looking to you for help. You're farther down the road. You're not like my buddy. You're somebody I want what you have. I'm willing to call you. You don't have to call me. You can take my inventory. There's some guys that can't handle that. I think that has some, I think, what do you think? I think that has something to do with humility. You know, I may be wrong. I think it has something to do with humility. I think everything that we do in here in terms of subjugating ourselves or being responsible to another person or laying our lives for another person or picking that we out and everything that has something to do with humility. You see, I want to talk about this stuff. I know we're out of time. I want to talk about this stuff because I think application is important. I think, you know, we can talk about theory till the cats come home. Why am I this? Why is I that? I prefer to talk about what does it look like when you're doing it. So at least you can see whether you're doing it or not. You know what I mean? I think it really boils down to straightforward yes or no questions. Do you have a sponsor? Don't you have a sponsor? Do you hang out with the sponsor? You don't hang out with the sponsor. Do you talk to him or don't you talk to him? Do you want to be like he is or don't? I mean, you know, how are you? Who's running your life? Who isn't running your life? Are you going to meetings or you're not going to meetings? Do you have a home group or you don't have a home group? You know, I think it comes down to really, I think humility and all this stuff we talk about isn't a pie in the sky thing. I think if it's actually working in your life, you should be able to answer a lot of questions yes. It's yes or no, not, well, let me think about it. You know what I mean? It's real simple. I cannot be fuzzy on this stuff because I'm an alcoholic. I'm fuzzy. Gives me running room, you know? You have a driver's license? Well, kind of. You know, I mean, I'm, you know? Are you working? Well, sort of, you know? You're paying your child support? Well, it's like this, you know? I mean, are you married? Oh, it's a long story, you know? I mean, it's, I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I'm all over the charts, you know what I mean? Forget it, you know? I'm a moving target. I got to be nailed. If you're not sponsored, you're not going to be nailed. You're all over the place. A rolling stone gathers no moss. And that has a lot to do with humility, you know? You're not sponsored. You don't have a sponsor. You know, I don't, you know, this is just my, you know, the way I see it all sort of works together. That's the way it looks like. So thank you very much.